Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, I'm Casey Luskin, and we're continuing our series this week celebrating Academic Freedom Day, February 12, 2010. Today's podcast features part two of an interview with Dennis Wagner of the Access Research Network, discussing the top five Darwin and Design media stories from 2009. Some of these stories highlight recent successes in the battle to protect academic freedom in evolution education, especially in the states of Texas and Louisiana. Our Friday's podcast on Academic Freedom Day 2010 will give an update on the lawsuits against the California Science Center for canceling a contract by a ProID group to screen a ProID film. For more information on Academic Freedom Day, visit academicfreedomday.com. Hello and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin with Dennis Wagner from the Access Research Network, and on this ID the Future podcast, we're going to discuss the top five Darwin and Design media stories from 2009, according to the Access Research Network. Now, we did stories 10 through 6 in a recent podcast, Dennis, and I know that our listeners can go and check out all these stories on your website at arn.org/top10. That's arn.org/top10. But really quick, you guys summarize the top 10 science and media stories for the debate over evolution and ID every year. Isn't that right?
That's right, Casey. And this year, as we talked about last time, we broke it into the top 10 science news stories, which we did first, and now we're doing the top 10 media news stories. And actually, we hope to get one more top 10 list out, the top 10 ID resources for the year. So we still have that to look forward to.
Okay, well, let's jump into the top five media stories for 2009 in the debate over Darwin and Design. Your number five story is that a Discovery Institute fellow, actually, Forrest Mims, was named to the top 50 brains in science list by Discover Magazine. Can you tell us a little bit about this story?
Yeah, actually, that was in their December 2008 issue, which late the year before, but it was so late we didn't get to report on it in 2008, so we thought it deserved to make the list in 2009. And especially because Forrest Mims is somebody that has been discriminated against in his career because he didn't support Darwinism, and that was when he lost his columnist job at Scientific American. He had kind of an amateur science column, and the editor there found out that through some questioning that he wasn't a Darwin sympathizer, and he kept pressing on that until he got Forrest let go because he wasn't a Darwinist. So Forrest knows firsthand what it's like to be discriminated against. But in this case, even though it's publicly known that he's an ID sympathizer, Discover Magazine felt that he had made such a contribution to science in many ways. He's most known for his electronics kits that he's developed for Radio Shack over the years. He was involved in one of the first startup computers back in the late 70s, early 80s. He also, in the last couple of decades, has made quite a contribution to atmospheric research with some of his own little monitoring devices that he's built, and he takes atmospheric readings daily at his own facility and elsewhere. So they just felt that he was an example of, I think they would put him in the amateur scientist column, but he's the scientist of every type, if you ask me. It's just he happens to do a lot of this stuff on his own, not funded by big institutions and not having a position with a big science organization, and yet he continues to publish. I think he's got more than 70 published articles and magazines and science journals. Do a Google on his name. You can find some of the amazing stuff that he's done. So we just want to congratulate Discover Magazine for being brave enough to put somebody on the list who wasn't a Darwin sympathizer and probably took some flack for that.
Absolutely. And just to make a note of Forrest Mims' innovation, he was actually one of the earliest people I'm aware of back in the early 1990s to stick his neck out and predict that we would find function for junk DNA. And of course, today the notion that junk DNA has function is really not even controversial. That scientific revolution is more or less complete. But back in the early 90s, the whole junk DNA mindset was really at its, probably near its peak. And people just assumed that if they didn't know what a type of DNA did, that it was the result of evolutionary random mutations, and it was just functionless garbage and junk. But Forrest Mims was going against the trend even back then, thinking outside the box, and he's actually a very early example of an ID proponent who predicted against the grain that we would find function for junk DNA. So my hat's off to Forrest Mims as well. Let's go into your number four story, the Darwin Bicentennial Bust. And I remember actually that Simon Conway Morris said in the journal Current Biology a few months ago that some of his colleagues were suffering from Darwin fatigue. And I found that quite amusing because, I mean, at some point you got to wonder, Are all these people really taking all this Darwin hoopla seriously after months and months and months of the same thing over and over again? I mean, doesn't it get old? So tell us about the Darwin bicentennial bust.
Well, I call it one of the biggest stories that's actually a non-story because, you know, we heard so much about the Darwin bicentennial in 2008 that was going to come up in 2009. You know, it's the 200th anniversary of Darwin's birthday. That was in February, 150th anniversary of the publication of his On the Origin of Species in November. And there are going to be all these celebrations, and boy, hadn't we progressed as a culture based on Darwin's ideas. Well, there are a couple special issues of science magazines that came out early in the year that put a lot of coverage on it. There was a couple of TV programs, but in general, I didn't see a lot of public celebration over Darwin and his ideas, or public adoration, whatever you want to call it. There were even some big publicity events, such as the announcing of the Ida fossil that was a coordinated media event that fell on its face, and people later claimed it was a scientific bust, that there was no new information there as far as Darwin's theory. And so his theory winds up with a black eye again, with the media celebrating something that turned out to be nothing. And yet, to me, the biggest stories of the year were those stories that we reported on in our science top 10 list that talked about revolutions that were coming in biology, non-reductionist revolutions, or there was talk of a post-Darwinian world. And so in a year when we're supposed to be celebrating Darwin's ideas, it seems to me like the leading scientists were ready to move on, saying, you know, we're not getting any further as far as advancing science with Darwin's theory. We got to start looking elsewhere.
It reminds me of what I've heard happened during the 1959 centennial anniversary of the publication of Darwin's Origin of Species, how there was so much hoopla about Darwin, and then it was soon thereafter that there was a real backlash, and actually that was when a bunch of scientists formed in response to all this promotion of Darwinism. And so
right.
You know, I really wonder what's going to be the backlash after this year of really pushing Darwin to the public. We'll have to wait and see. Your number three story is a poll that was taken about a year ago in January of 2009 that shows that support for the freedom to teach the controversy over Darwinian evolution, not only is it very high among Americans, over 75%, but it's high regardless of someone's religion or political views or their education levels. What did this poll say, and why is this significant?
Well, a large majority, as you said, agree that teachers and students should have academic freedom to discuss both the strengths and weaknesses of evolution as a scientific theory. 54% strongly agreed, and only 16% disagreed with that concept. So I think there's a large public support for the idea that we should teach the strengths and weaknesses of any scientific theory. So that was one main point. It also turns out that 82% of Democrats agreed that we should teach the strengths and weaknesses of Darwin's theory. That was even more than the Republicans, which were 73%. Liberals, 86%. Conservatives, 72%. College graduates, 84%. Those with no Christian or Jewish background supported it by nearly 82%. So it's not just conservative religious people that are behind this idea of teaching strengths and weaknesses. This is a great concept of liberal education, and it appears most of our country supports this approach.
Yes, I think that this is a very significant poll, Dennis, largely because, I mean, in these divided times, on how many issues do upwards of 80% of Americans agree with a particular political issue? In this case, we see that over 80% of Democrats and liberals think that you should teach both the evidence for and against evolution. And this is extremely significant. You know, if politicians want an issue that Americans agree on, this is one that they should take note of. Let's go to your number two story, which is that the Louisiana Board of Elementary and Secondary Education has adopted rules for implementing the Science Education Act. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about it, and I'll see if I can fill in any gaps.
Well, this was the academic freedom bill that was passed by the legislature back in 2008, but then they had to pass some rules to actually implement that. And they did that in January, but it really wasn't until September that those rules respecting the intent of the law were finally safeguarded. It basically allows teachers to use supplementary materials to teach controversial scientific theories without the threat of recrimination. And we've seen from our earlier stories, Casey, how important that is, because recrimination happens, whether it's in the public or in the schools or in the job location. So there's many scientific controversies going on today. Darwinism isn't the only one. There's the origin of life, there's global warming, there's human cloning, and this kind of law Academic Freedom Bill protects the rights of teachers to use supplemental material to bring different viewpoints on these issues.
That's exactly right, Dennis. And, you know, I want to make an important point that surveys of teachers in Louisiana showed that upwards of 50% of them did not feel comfortable teaching subjects like evolution in an objective fashion. They felt that there was a need to protect academic freedom on this issue. Now, the other side in Louisiana, the Louisiana Darwin Lobby, they had a lot to say. And basically, their response was, this is, quote, creationist code language, unquote. Barbara Forrest released a document when this bill was being debated that used the word creationist code language or something to that effect over 20 times. So their response is that somehow this law, which expressly does not cover the teaching of religion and only protects the teaching of objective science, that somehow that is going to allow creationism and religion to be brought into the classroom. And of course that isn't true. It just shows the bankruptcy of the objections to these perfectly reasonable bills. I don't know why any reasonable person would oppose this kind of legislation and these kinds of policies when all they do is protect the teaching of controversial theories in an objective fashion. Who would not want to do that unless, of course, you don't want controversial theories like evolution taught objectively. You want them taught one-sidedly. That's why the other side comes up with these really outlandish and just patently false objections. You know there's something else going on because they're so hard to defend. What's really going on is they're just grasping at straws for arguments to defend dogmatism in the classroom. The losers here, unfortunately, are Louisiana students, but in this case, they didn't lose. They actually won, and that's the good news. Let's move on to the number one Darwin and Design media story for 2009, namely the victory in the Texas State Board of Education when in March of last year it voted to require students to critique and examine all sides of the scientific evidence of really all scientific theories, but of course this includes evolution, and also to specifically analyze and evaluate certain core evolution topics like natural selection or mutations in common ancestry. So why is this your number one story of last year?
Well, it's number one story, Casey, again, because, you know, public policy being put in place that protects the rights of students and teachers to freely examine these scientific controversies. And I don't think any of us in this country want a dogma to be taught in the science classroom. And yet that's really what's happening with Darwin's theory. And so this now protects teachers and students and gives them the freedom to critically examine these ideas. And significant about this was that there was a lot of testimony from scientists on both sides, but especially the scientists that come from the ID perspective in making a scientific case in front of this board on why there was a controversy and why students needed the ability to examine this controversy.
Dennis, I very much agree with you that this is probably the number one Darwin and Design media story for 2009. This was a huge victory for students and for education, not just in Texas, but nationwide, because hopefully in a couple years when textbooks are being evaluated in Texas, they will adopt textbooks that actually implement the inquiry method when teaching evolution, rather than sort of the faux inquiry method that just asks students to give assent to evolution that we find in most biology textbooks today. So this hopefully is a very significant story that will be an ongoing story that we'll be hearing about in the coming years as they go into the textbook adoption phase in Texas. So Dennis, we really appreciate your time. Is there anything else you'd like to add for our listeners about your top 10 stories?
Well, I just think the last two, Casey, one thing that amuses me, I guess, is that the other side comes across looking very intolerant. And so you have basically the self-proclaimed liberals combating a liberal principle, which is critical thinking. And it's just fun to watch them try to defeat their own principles because they're really not open-minded about these issues. They are very dogmatic about these issues. And so they show themselves to be not as open-minded and not as liberal as they like to project themselves being, but in fact being very closed-minded about a particular worldview and wanting only that worldview taught in the classroom.
I mean, you almost have to live these things to believe them, Dennis. When I was in Texas last year, we saw so many members of the evolution lobby getting worked up simply because the words analyze and evaluate were being added to the Texas science standards with regards to topics like natural selection and mutations and common ancestry. They literally did not want students to be able to analyze and evaluate those topics. That made them absolutely infuriated. So when you're dealing with folks who get angry, When students are merely being asked to analyze and evaluate the evidence for evolution, you know that something's wrong, and you know that this is really not nearly as controversial issue as the other side makes it out to be. All we're asking is that students have full access to look at the scientific evidence, critically evaluate it, and make up their own minds. And it's pretty clear, as a matter of fact, it's clear as night and day that some folks don't want that to be happening. So I think that's a good take-home message here, Dennis. We appreciate the support of the Eye to the Future podcast listeners for academic freedom. So keep on listening and keep on supporting truth in science education. Thanks for your time, Dennis.
Thank you, Casey.
I'm Casey Luskin with Eye to the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.